College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
We are right in the thick of week one, and I cannot wait to talk to David Pollock about his experience last night at Clemson. He's in Arlington, Texas, of course, getting ready for tomorrow night's huge showdown, Oregon versus Auburn. That game, of course, starting off in the morning with game day in our coverage. Game day last night at Clemson as the number one team in the country. Looked pretty good against Georgia Tech. What did you see last night that stood out? I know this morning there was some, you know, Friday morning quarterbacking about people criticizing Trevor Lawrence. But what did you see, David?
Well, I mean, that's always going to happen. And here's the thing, just like week zero, the week before Miami and Florida, it was sloppy. I mean, it wasn't a thing of beauty. And I would say Clemson definitely didn't play their best. I'm sorry, did you say the score again, Kevin? Was it a 38-point win?
Yeah, exactly.
That's really fun. That's a fun problem to have when you're Clemson. A couple things stook out. Trevor Lawrence, man, he didn't play his best ball. He made a few uncharacteristic mistakes. I'll be interested to see this year with him, all the expectations, all the hype. To me, can he stay patient? Can he understand that I can't always hit the home run? And last year he was kind of worked into that lineup and kind of spoon-fed, and it was really ETN and running game, and then it became more the Trevor Lawrence show by the end of the season. So I'll just be interested because you saw Tua struggle with that a year ago because the beginning of the season was so easy and was just killing everybody that late in the season when he needed to take some checkdowns and throw the ball away possibly, he was still like, dude, I'm making big plays.
Yeah,
and so
my biggest concern last night, him trying to make a tackle there. Come on, off that pick.
That ticks me off, okay? It ticks me off when people say he shouldn't make a tackle. What do you want him to do?
I'm
a football player.
I'm not supposed to let you go score. But we are talking, I understand to a certain extent that you don't want him to get the guy to score. But at the same time, big picture, long term, this is your franchise quarterback, not just for 1 year, but for next year as well.
Yeah, big picture, I get you. The bigger picture in football is competing at every level. And you can't ask Xavier Thomas and all of these guys to compete as hard as they can on every play if your quarterback's not allowed to compete. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and you got to be safe. Because I'll be the first to tell you, Kevin, let me tell you something. Here's what happens when a quarterback throws an interception. Former defensive line, right? I'm looking for the quarterback to kill him.
Immediately,
right? I'm
looking
for the quarterback to not only hit him, to land on top of him, like, and put all of my weight on top of his shoulder if I get an opportunity. So I get it, but no, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and as a coach, I would be like, please don't get hurt, but you can't take competing out of the game, and I love seeing stuff like that. I love competitors, man. That makes me excited for college football to have guys.
I love that too. I don't want him to change his style. It's more about being smart and being aware as well while you're doing it. And the big story to me yesterday, and I think you know, and as much as I know following this team, is Travis Etienne. I mean, everybody's now, oh, Etienne. But listen, if you follow that team last year, he was the heart and soul in that backfield. And the stat that came out from ESPN Stats and Info, it's pretty insane here. Since the start of last season, Clemson has averaged more yards per play on Travis Etienne runs, 8.6, than Trevor Lawrence throws, 8.2. At what point are we talking about Etienne being the best running back in the country?
I think last night started it. You know, when you're struggling a little bit out the gate. Now they got fortunate because they got the fumble on the punt and score with the Trevor Lawrence run, but they didn't look as crisp as you thought they would offensively. And then all of a sudden, you know, Tech fumbles and back Clemson up, and he goes 90. And you know, his ability—it's not his ability to run people over because he's not a run you over guy. But watch how easy and effortlessly he runs through contact. It's just, because he is a burner, and he's got those jets. But when people get close to him and stuff, they just kind of bounce off of him. And he's just got an unbelievable knack to have great power for a back that's not huge. And the evolution of Travis Etienne, a couple years ago, you know, 2 years ago when he came in as a freshman, you're like, dude, this dude's got some jets. You can see juice, can't pick up pass protection, not real physical. Last year, you're like, okay, a little bit more physical. This year, you're like, ooh, okay, homeboy's been in the weight room. He's been on the squat rack. Dude's been – developing that lower body more and more, and you can tell now that he's one of the best backs in college
football. I mean, when he went to that second and third level on the big run, I mean, it looks like you're playing a video game with his skill set. And my thought process was, okay, you get a game like that out of the way, and you figure some things out, but everybody's healthy, everybody's ready, because honestly, next week is a huge game. And week two, of course, LSU-Texas will be much discussed, but we cannot forget about what Texas A&M did a year ago. It was a confidence builder for Jimbo against Clemson, losing by 2 points. They win last night against Texas State with Kellen Mond. From what you have seen last night and what you know about Jimbo and Kellen Mond getting ready for that game at Clemson, what are your early thoughts?
Well, and let's not forget, too, this is Jimbo Fisher's first year a year ago, and their first big test was Clemson.
Yep.
And remember, Kellen Mond was not a guy that was talked about as a great player in college football. He was fighting for his starting job and comes in, has a great day. Dude threw for over 400 against Clemson. Like, it wasn't a good day. It was a great day, and it was against all those freak shows that were there a year ago. So I think second year under Jimbo Fisher, he needs to take a leap. He needs to get better passing the football down the field. First of all, his weapons on the outside all are machines. Like, they're not human. They're cyborgs. They're all 6'2" or bigger, all experienced, top six targets coming back outside the tight end from a year ago. So I think that this offense is in a good position to succeed. It will be very good. It will be better than it was a year ago, and it was the 15th best offense in college football. So it'll be a huge challenge for Clemson's defense. Clemson's defense, I don't know how good they are yet. I know yesterday against Georgia Tech's offense is going to be atrocious this year.
Yes.
Okay, newsflash.
Big transition.
It's going to be bad.
Completely big transition when you have the parts of a triple option, or at least Paul Johnson's offense, to now opening things up under Jeff Collins. Completely different.
Yeah, it stinks for the kids because they're going to have to go through these growing pains. But, like, I mean, for example, I'm on the sidelines and it's 7-0, and it's a pretty good football game, and Tech rolls the quarterback out and tries to throw a little out route for 6 yards, and the guy throws it 17 yards away from him. And you're just like, it's going to be a learning curve, and it's not an offense that's ready for success yet. And so I think I want to see about their secondary with Clemson and their defense and how rebuilt they are. And also Trevor Lawrence will face some pressure, because Trevor Lawrence's offensive line, to me, will be the story of the season. There is no question mark on that offense, except for the offensive line. They have to figure out what they have up front. Are they going to be a team that can pound you in play action? Or can they protect Lawrence in known passing situations? So I think we still got some learning to do and figuring out about what Clemson is. But Kellen Mond will be a challenge, and he was efficient, you know, yesterday, and replacing I think the biggest task for A&M and their offense will be replacing Williams when Travion leaves, and who's the guy that's going to step in. And Spiller and Corbin got the reps, and Corbin, I think, is going to be the man. I think he's going to have a great year, but huge test for Clemson coming in week two.
You mentioned huge test, Pac-12 this weekend, huge test with Oregon on the road, of course, and taking on Auburn in Arlington. For me last night, two takeaways. Watching UCLA, I felt really bad for Dorian Thompson-Robinson, just the way that offense looked, the way he played, he did not look good. And I didn't see a difference from year one to year two under Chip. And I understand it is game one, and Cincinnati is very, very good. They're going to be very good in the group of five conversation, but it was not a good look for UCLA, where you think last year's growing pains. Can you take a step now after an offseason for the Bruins? Do they have any playmakers? And where's the separation? I didn't see anything in that offense.
It wasn't pretty, man. It wasn't pretty. It was and not pretty. Thompson Robinson, you know, he was 8 for 26.
Oh.
I wanted to put into context, not pretty. Offensively with Chip Kelly, it's going to be very interesting just to see what they can do. And last night was not an indictment of that. You know what? He has to be able to – the quarterback in their offense has to be able to run the football.
Yes.
And can they get that from him? Can Chip find a way to use the athletic quarterback? And listen, that was one of the things he was the greatest at when he was at Oregon, and he was very successful and always been able to run the zone read and still pound people. It wasn't, you know, just finesse, but – the quarterback run game. So I think that'll be an issue. Listen, I don't think Chip's going to take this team and be a contender in the Pac-12. I never have thought so, and and I don't feel that way any differently after seeing that. But I do. Cincinnati's just ground and pound. They just took the will away from UCLA.
Yes.
And UCLA rebuilt that defensive line, and it's a bunch of grown-ups. I mean, a bunch of 320-pound guys up front that are super strong. Well, Cincinnati, who's not in a Power 5 conference, pushed them around pretty good. What are they going to do when they see Utah?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it wasn't a good positive debut. I don't have a lot of things positive to say about UCLA's team after Michael Warren and Dokes came in there and just pounded the football and kind of had their way.
And those guys were a little beat up in that game, but Warren, you could see the separation. You could see him on the field. You're like, okay, that's the best player on the field right now. Anytime he touched the football. And the one thing that UCLA does not have at that quarterback position right now in that chip offense is even the threat for a guy that could run the ball. So then all of a sudden it gives your defense the moment to hesitate. Let's go to Utah. I mean, Huntley didn't look that great when you look at his numbers, but the idea that they looked much better in the second half, that to me, that's my team in the Pac-12. I really like them, especially on the defensive front. What was your takeaway from Utah in a game like that where it's a rivalry right off the start, two schools mm-hmm. that absolutely can't stand each other and they're within 50 miles?
My first thought, if you want me to start talking about concerns for Utah, was their kicking game. Good God.
Yeah, brutal.
That was a train wreck to start, and that was one of the, you know, question marks coming in. But listen, one thing I saw about a rebuilt offensive line for Utah is I think they're going to be perfectly fine. I think they're going to be good up front, good enough up front to be, especially with Huntley and Moss. I mean, those two guys are going to have such an ability to run the football and be dynamic. I mean, if you're not watching Zach Moss, that dude, he runs so physical. Like, he is not afraid of contact and welcomes contact. And he's built like a little bowling ball.
Yeah, he is.
Going to be, I mean, it's like tackling a tree stump, dude. I mean, he's going to be really, really good. Huntley wasn't the best version, and it was more dink and dunk. I think he was like 13 to 16 and no really big plays in the offense. But, again, you can ease into a game like that against a physical team, and it was 9-6 at the half, and it was very ugly. But you could see the offense start to hit their stride, start to get more success, and start to get more confidence. Because, again, the guard spots inside are going to be an issue for Utah that's going to have to continue to grow and get better. The passing game will continue to grow with first-year offensive coordinators. So I think I understand, just like Clemson, I understand just like Florida and all these teams week one, that you don't see the best, most crisp thing, but you can't start off a season most of the time clicking on all cylinders. And I like what I saw from Utah apart from the kicking game, because that was no bueno.
We got a couple of top 25 games on the schedule tonight, and it's not a cupcake here. South Florida is hosting Wisconsin. And for me, you know, as a guy that grew up, that spent 6 years, grew up in the business in that Tampa, Sarasota region, I know what it's like at the end of August. I mean, it is brutal when it comes to weather and how hot it is as they get ready mm-hmm. to for a pending hurricane and bad weather over the weekend. Now you have Jonathan Taylor in that backfield with Wisconsin.
Ooh.
Any concern for a team like Wisconsin trying to figure things out at the quarterback position, even though you have an elite running back behind you heading into a game like South Florida?
Yes. I think you have concern. Now listen, Wisconsin's going to be good enough against South Florida to line up and pound South Florida. And Jonathan Taylor, if you haven't seen, please don't clump Jonathan Taylor in the all Wisconsin running back category.
Why not?
You know, because he's different. He has explosive speed. He's not just a big clodder that smashes you in the face. And like, he's an athletic freak. That dude is athletic for his size and what he's able to accomplish. He's a special back. He's not just a Wisconsin product. So when you watch him, just keep in mind, he's special and he's different. He's one of the best in the country. They announced that Jack Cohn's going to start.
Jack Cohn's right? going to start, exactly.
Yeah, and he beat out Mertz, who was an all-world guy that, you know, that they got as a freshman that they thought might come in and lead. Remember, Hornibrook left after a couple seasons and
went to Florida State. Yep.
And didn't beat out Blackman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Wisconsin's quarterback spot has been an issue for several years. They're going to have to figure that out. And again, it's not going to affect them this week, but how do they get this offense more versatile? Paul Chryst is one of the best offensive coaches in football, using shifts and motions and using your eyes against you to first establish the run, but then play action. And they're going to have to figure that part out. And defensively, on the other side, last year was a significant step in the wrong direction for Wisconsin. So this year will be a bigger test for them. Defensive line, they got ran over. Like, that's not normal to see Wisconsin getting pushed around like they were consistently up front on the defensive line. And I know they had a lot of injuries, but a lot of guys obviously coming back with experience now. So, again, I don't expect it to be the cleanest game in the world, just like a lot of these openers, but the quarterback spot for Wisconsin, if they're going to compete in the Big Ten and they're going to be a team we look at all year, is that a spot that you're trying to, hey, Kevin, don't look over here. Don't look, nothing to see here. Let me hide this. You know, they're going to have to figure out a way to get some play out of that spot.
How do you view Wisconsin when you look at them in the West? It looks like there's a free-for-all here in the West. Here, I mean, Northwestern, of course, Iowa, the return maybe of Nebraska with Scott Frost, Minnesota getting a win last night, Purdue, let's not sleep on Rondale Moore. How do you view the West?
I think it's wide open. I really do. I think you're going to have a lot of good football teams. I mean, you mentioned, you know, Nebraska, the third there, and there's a lot of people that think Nebraska might be a sleeper playoff team, you know, and that's crazy to think.
Boy, that is bold.
No, I don't, but I've seen it. I've seen people predict Nebraska to be really, really high and to be good and to be, you know, 10-plus wins, and I don't think they're ready for that yet. I'm a huge fan of Scott Frost, but I'm not ready to jump in the deep end of the pool yet. I mean, I'm only
but that is a deep end in the pool. I mean, and you know what that is? That's also praying that Adrian Martinez stays in one piece.
Yes, and you're also going to ask him to do a lot because that offensive line is completely rebuilding too. So now you're asking him, he's going to have to run the football a good amount, throw the ball a lot, be your guy, and somehow not get nicked up. His true freshman year, he had a great year, but there's a reason that they started off so poorly, and it was because he was banged up and got hurt. So I think it's wide open, that division. I think Wisconsin, the team that has been a large part of the last decade, has been the team that you pointed to and said, this team is going to win the West, and they're going to be in contention to be in the top 25 every single year. I think it's more wide open, and I don't see any of those teams going – undefeated. I see a bunch of losses in the column for all of them. I think they'll all beat each other up, to be honest.
Yeah, the one bonus that Nebraska has when you look at their schedule, they're at home against Ohio State, at home against Northwestern, they're at home against Wisconsin, and they're at home against Iowa. And if you could handle
that's
your
great,
business.
By the way.
What's that?
That's great. That's awesome. And the at homes, I'm sure everybody sees that and is like, yeah, I mean, that don't mean you're going
to
win.
No, understood. Understood. But when you're talking to 18 to 22 year olds, that plays a huge role here, especially if, you know, when you go to the environment like playing in Columbus, like we saw last year with this team, where it felt like they had Ohio State and they could do some things early on in that game, and then it fell apart for them.
Well, either way, this year will be another building block for Scott Frost.
Yeah.
And you've seen the recruiting pick up. He's going to get more skilled guys. They're going to continue to grow. I'm just not ready to put, even with the schedule, I'm not ready to put Nebraska in that conversation.
Well, how do you view another top 25 matchup, staying in the Big Ten? How do you view Michigan State? They face Tulsa tonight at home. It feels like they have a chip on their shoulder. Everybody, of course, talks about Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State coming off a year where the expectations, and then all of a sudden they were forgotten, and then you can't sleep on Penn State. How do you view Michigan State here, quietly, while no one's paying attention, and entering this season?
Here's how I view Michigan State, and a lot of people are going to feel the same exact way. I like Michigan State. I always do. Defensively. Every single year, I know what I'm going to get from them. Defensively. Offense last year was a trainer.
They were awful. Yep.
They scored less than 40 points the last four games of the season. Like, I mean, it was atrocious. And Lewerke comes back at quarterback, and a couple years ago, he was one of the only guys ever to go 2,000 and over 2,000 passing and over 500 rushing, and, you know, looked like a dual threat guy that kind of sparked Michigan State's offense, but it hasn't been working, and they have to figure that out. And offensively, what are they going to hang their hat on? And that's the whole season for Michigan State, because again, it's always physical defense, and their defensive line is going to be one of the best in the country, but how do they move the football? Last year, a lot of injuries, just like everybody else deals with it. The receiving core kind of derailed the continuity, and Lewerke getting hurt. And So I don't know what I'm going to get from the quarterback spot. I don't know what I'm going to get from the offense. I think they'll be in every single game, and obviously they should beat Tulsa. But I think we'll find out a lot about them, Kevin, week three. Arizona State last year, that was a loss.
Yep.
That was a big loss. That was one of those moments for Herm Edwards when you're a young coach and you're building the roster. It's like, aha, that's a big moment. Like, believe in me, guys. See, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it kind of helped.
And that was a game where Michigan State, they had the lead the entire game. And then coming in late, field goal is the difference. And it felt like it was a starting point where it was like, all right, Herm's here and he's doing something real in the desert.
Well, and more importantly, Kevin, now my team believes that.
Yep.
Because I can stand up here and I can preach to you all I want about we're going to do X, we're going to do Y. These are our goals. Until you tangibly beat somebody and have that aha moment as a player, it's just talk. Now you're like, dang, this dude ain't just somebody that worked at ESPN. This dude knows football. Like, so I think that it was a buy-in moment for Arizona State. You saw it pick up again last night. I think Arizona State's young freshman quarterback is going to be legit. Did you watch him last night at all?
The thing about it is what Herm is doing and what Herm's doing with that staff in recruiting, it's pretty remarkable where people were a year ago entering the season in his first season and him coming back to the game. And Herm's a friend, and I was picking up on some people with their humor and their jokes, and I felt like last year was a vindication for Herm, and now this year it's like Herm gets the laugh at everybody else the way he's building this team.
No doubt, and again, he had the belief, and now you look at last night, they won, and listen, I know it was Kent State. I'm not sitting here saying they beat the best team in the world, but when you got a quarterback that I looked at last night with Jaden Daniels, and he, first of all, he's a true freshman, and he looks like a true freshman. I say that because he's like 170, soaking wet, probably. I mean, he's going to need some weight room time, okay? But you could tell he's a lefty, dude. He's got some spring in his step. You could tell it. You could see he could run the football. And you've already got Benjamin, who's going to be one of the best backs, period, you know, in the Pac-12. He's already really, really good. And now you throw in Daniels, who can scramble, spread the football around. They're a team that's going to be fun to watch, and some people pick them preseason to win the Pac-12 division. And I, Herbie, exactly. And I see that. And last night was a good start for them. And listen, that them versus Michigan State tells me a lot about the direction of Arizona State, and it tells me a lot about the direction of Michigan State. Game three will be a big test, and we'll learn.
All right, listen, you got a segment later on today, and we were talking about this before we started, and I thought that, hey, this is much better. Instead of previewing a bunch of games tomorrow, I want some of these shocking headlines that you believe in. You're not giving us takes. You're giving us your opinion that you think entering this season will surprise a lot of people. What do you got?
Well, obviously, it's always the time of year when we start to do this.
Yes.
And we start to make bold predictions and put somebody in the playoffs or whatever, but I mean, I look at realistic, bold predictions that I think can happen and things that people aren't going to be talking about or aren't talking about now. I think Missouri will, in November, will be a top-10 team that goes to Georgia in a huge showdown. They'll play the number 3 team in the country in November, and it'll be a top-5 to top-10 showdown, and Missouri will be undefeated entering that contest.
Will they be worthy of being a top-10 team in your mind?
Well, I mean, define worthy. I mean, if you're beating Wyoming, West Virginia, South Carolina, Kentucky, and Ole Miss, I mean, that's not worthy of anything yet. But I will say this about what they have been able to accomplish at Missouri. The fact that they got sanctioned and they got nobody off this team, because there is plenty of people on Missouri's roster that could have gone elsewhere and played that could have made enormous impacts in college football. Kelly Bryant's the first one. Like, remember, he went there and wanted to work on his NFL career, and then all of a sudden he realized he can't play in the postseason. Like, that's a big shot. And for them to keep all of that together, it's been an amazing start to the season. And now we'll figure out, I think they'll be 8-0. I think they'll beat Kentucky. I think they'll beat South Carolina. I think they'll be facing Georgia as an undefeated top-10 team. I think they're going to be a really, really good team this year. That doesn't mean they're going to beat Georgia, but I think in the end of the season they're going to be a top 25.
Okay, with that statement, how much does that have to do with Kelly Bryant in your mind? Because if they're 8-0 and they're a top-10 team, I would think that somewhere around that time, there's going to be a Heisman discussion and Kelly Bryant would be there.
I don't think Kelly Bryant's going to put up numbers that are going to be Heisman Trophy numbers.
Got it.
I don't think it's going to be. Listen, when you saw Drew Locke a year ago, you saw the undeniable, unquestionable talent to throw the football. I mean, he could really spin it. When Derek Dooley came in and changed this offense, you saw more variation. You saw better production from the offense. I think you'll continue to see that trend grow. I think Kelly Bryant is going to do enough in a spread offense with his legs and his arm to keep the chains moving. I don't think it's going to be as explosive as he's going to be a Heisman Trophy type guy. But if he can continue to learn and grow and get better, he's a guy that's already been in the fires, man. I've already seen him in big games. I've already seen him tested. And Missouri has a good chance in November to be undefeated, a top 10 team going to Athens, Georgia to play a top 5 team.
I like it. What else you got?
I think Oklahoma, for the first time in really, you look about a decade about what they've been able to produce at the quarterback spot, they won't have the best quarterback in the Big 12. Where does
that quarterback reside then?
They'll be behind their rivals with Hookem. I think Sam Ellinger will be the best quarterback and responsible for the most touchdowns in the Big 12 this year. Jalen Hurts coming in, I know he's going to be experienced, and I know he's done some really good things at Alabama. I don't expect him to come in and be even close to Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray, and I think Oklahoma's offense will take a step back. Listen, them taking a step back to the pack, even remotely close to the rest of society, is first world problems, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand that. Like, they've been so far ahead of everybody else, it's been amazing, but I think the Big 12 honors and the offensive player of the year is going to be a Texas quarterback, not a Oklahoma quarterback.
I think we've talked a little bit about it earlier in the week. I have Utah winning the Pac-12.
Going out on a limb.
No, it's not going out on a limb. You want a going out on a limb one? Alabama won't make the playoff.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Now you're showing some.
Georgia's going to make the playoff. I think Clemson's going to make the playoff. I think Ohio State will beat Michigan again in Ann Arbor and with Justin Fields and Ryan Day. And there's going to be a lot of questions after that experience for Jim Harbaugh. And I think Ohio State will make the playoff as well.
So you just gave me – you really gave me a couple of vocal predictions. You gave me that Michigan's going to lose to Ohio State again for the ninth year in a row, I believe.
Yeah, it would be quite a run, I don't think a Wolverine fan wants to even bring up. And
you gave me Alabama's not going to make the playoff. So, okay, who's going to beat Alabama to keep them out of the playoff besides Georgia? Because I think it's going to take more than just Georgia beating.
I think the way Georgia's going to play in the SEC championship game to get in the playoff will be the difference to keep Alabama out.
So a one loss Alabama's going to be out, or are they going to have two losses?
So that's a good question, because I think Alabama's going to beat LSU. So I think Alabama will be undefeated going into that game. They're going to lose to Georgia. One team that could mess everything up in the SEC is Texas A&M and whatever they have. I mean, that's a team that could have five losses this year, or that's a team could have two really, like, I can't believe you could say this, but two really good losses considering how well they play in these games. But A&M could be, to me, a team that could cause some havoc and destruction when we look at the playoff. And, you know,
not only in the SEC, they could also do it in the ACC, because we just talked about
Clemson
in week two.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're a team that definitely has a good chance to make some hay with a lot of talented guys. And you're right, they might not be in the playoffs, but when you play Clemson and have that opportunity of what they have, and then you play, remember, they play Auburn in a couple weeks.
Yep.
I mean, they play at Georgia late in the season. They play Alabama. It's insane.
Auburn's another team that could screw some things up for a lot of people in the SEC and open the door in the playoff, in my mind, especially with that defensive front. Who knows what they're going to get out of Nix, the true freshman. But with Gus calling plays, I mean, that could open things up. While I believe Utah is going to win the Pac-12, I don't think the Pac-12 will have a representing member once again in the playoff. I think that comes from the Big 12, and I think Texas is the team. If Ellinger stays healthy, I think Texas will be in the playoff.
See, and that's a big if for me when I look at Texas. And I don't say it because of talent-wise. I say it because last year he was head and shoulders their best running back.
Yes.
And you asked him to be a bull and to lower his shoulder, and he is so competitive and so tough, and I love everything about that kid. But can he take the pounding for all those weeks and go tick for tack? And their defense, I mean, I think it'll take a step back because I think they lost so much production, it'll take a step back. So that'll be interesting to know. So do you have Utah losing several games then?
No, I've got – so Utah, when you look at their schedule, they could make a deep run here. But I think what's going to hurt them is how everybody views the entire Pac-12. If Auburn beats Oregon and hypothetically we look at Utah losing to Oregon, you can't put Utah in the playoff then, right?
No, you can't. And the thing about Utah's schedule that's beautiful is they dodge Stanford and Oregon.
Exactly.
But that's a huge blessing for them.
Those teams are all going to be like, when you look at the top 15, you have three teams in the Pac-12 in the top 15 this year. You can interchange and say, okay, who's going to stand out? And then the idea that USC's not there in the top 25, Stanford is coming in at number 25. They're still, those teams are still going to surprise somebody and pull somebody down. Right?
Yeah.
I think there's a little unknown with Eason at Washington. I love Peterson.
A lot of unknowns.
I love Peterson, but I can't trust the idea of, and Washington's going to be a big team. I mean, I think Peterson's done a phenomenal job in making sure that they lose talent, they come right back, and they have the depth and there's no drop off. But I don't know what we're going to expect out of Eason.
Well, I'm trying to put the puzzle together, the Kevin Nagani puzzle. Because if Utah's a one-loss team and Alabama's a one-loss team, there's no way Alabama's going behind Utah.
Okay, so, but I just said there's no way I'm going to have Utah in the playoff. I'm going to have Texas be the difference getting in from the Big 12 and Georgia knocking off Alabama, and I don't think – and obviously things can change, but off the top, for this to work in my mind – it can't be like a 24-20 game or a game that we've seen the last couple of years between Georgia and Alabama in the SEC championship game, right?
You're saying it's two halves of the first half of what you've seen in the last couple of games.
It's Georgia saying, you know what, we are going to go all out and we are going – there's not going to be any doubt we are going to handle our business in Atlanta and beat Alabama the right way.
I like it. Kevin brings some heat today. That's right. What I'm talking about.
I mean, I like, man. Do you have your playoff here? I mean, do you have your four?
Yeah, I got Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, just like half the country except for Kevin. Actually, 90% of the country except for Kevin. And I got Utah. I got Utah making it.
You got Utah making it, huh?
Yeah, I think Utah has a really good chance to go undefeated. I think their schedule, like we talked about, not having Oregon, not having Stanford, and playing the physical brand that they play in that league. The big games for them is going to be at Washington State, and then they got USC. So I think it's honestly a four-game schedule for them. And I like them to beat Washington State. I like them to beat USC. And at the end of the season, I like them to beat Washington. So, and here's another thing, too, with Jacob Eason. Back to him. I like Jacob Eason's talent. I really do. I think he's... not many in the country throw the ball better than him. Big, strong kid. When he was at Georgia, he had a lot of maturity issues. He had a lot of – he didn't work on the details. And listen, he was number one recruit at high school and had the big, huge arm and came all the way across from the West Coast to the East Coast, and a lot of things went into that. But, you know, footwork and attention to detail wasn't strong. And if he can master all those things, he ain't lacking talent. So – it'll be a very interesting season with him. And now, by the way, too, and this is what I can't stand about the transfer portal, Kevin. I hate the transfer portal. Just like at Mississippi State, Tommy Stevens' main starter, Thompson, gone.
Yep.
Who's your backup?
Yep.
Like, Jacob Eason gets dinged now. And your competition that was a two-man race and literally was a legit close competition. Now it's Jacob Eason, and now it's a huge step off because your other guy takes off and leaves. And that drives me absolutely batty. Adrian Martinez a year ago, same thing, man. I mean, he gets dinged, and it was an awesome battle with another kid. And I don't even like to mention the kids that transfer because it drives me nuts. Literally, awesome battle. The kid takes off after the guy gets named a starter. Just like that. transfer portal, and that drives me crazy.
I want to clear one thing up, too. I had mentioned it when I was looking at the schedule, and here I am combining these teams when I'm looking at the top 15 with a Pac-12. It's the game against Washington where I have Utah losing, not because they don't have Oregon on the schedule. It's that game because Washington's coming off a bye. It's early November. And I want to see how this Utah team responds. And I also want to see if Tyler Huntley, I think that this team has a legitimate chance, like you, like saying it, going undefeated. I want to see Huntley stay in shape. And he's got to stay on the field. I mean, with the injuries that he's got to go through. They are the best shot. If Oregon loses to Auburn, though, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt the entire Pac-12 and what they want to do long term here this season.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt, because none of us expect Auburn to win the SEC.
Nope.
So you're talking about a 2 or 3, 4 loss Auburn team like a year ago to beat the Pac-12 champs in Washington. It doesn't make the case. You know, there's another thing that could help the Pac-12. If Notre Dame can come to Athens and beat Georgia.
Oh, yeah, and that's a team.
Huge. And then Stanford or USC, one of those two teams, beats Notre Dame.
Then you have some chaos.
Now you got some out of conference wins to look at. Now it's not just the Auburn comparison. But the Pac-12 also had a big win over here, and so I think they need to do something out of conference, because I think if it boils down to it, and it's every conference in college football has a one loss team, then I think the Pac-12 is left out regardless. I think that there's other leagues that 100% get the nod over them right away. And nobody even bats an eye has been.
You just sold my point. You just made my point right there. So
yeah.
If Utah goes down to potentially Washington, I do not think the Pac-12 will have anybody representing them unless Oregon runs the table. But, boy, their schedule is brutal as well. Listen, before we go, I know you're going to experience Arlington. You're going to lead into that game. Who's going to win Oregon, Auburn, in your mind?
You know, I really have gone back and forth on this, and I really do think there's a case to be made for both sides. I do know that Auburn has monsters on their defensive line. I mean, they have guys that can make it extremely difficult for Justin Herbert, but Justin Herbert's also a guy that can pull the ball and make life miserable for them with his running ability. So you're telling me that I got to go with a true freshman and quarterback, Bo Nix, for Auburn over Justin Herbert, who was potentially the number one pick a year ago.
Yep.
So that's what I'm debating in my small brain. There's not a lot to debate. But in the end, I will take Auburn.
Because you're going with that defensive line.
Yes, and here's the thing, and Justin Herbert could prove me wrong in a heartbeat, and he can be so much improved. The passing of Justin Herbert and the inconsistencies he has, it's enough to give you pause. And if he was Mariota-esque and with the accuracy and with pinpoint, you know, most of the 99% of the time or 80% of the time, I would feel differently. I don't know if he's going to make those plays, because he'll show you some wild plays, but he'll also show you some plays that you don't necessarily care for. So I guess I'm stupid, and I'll go with the true freshman over the possible number one pick in the NFL draft.
Pollock, have some fun there, man, and say hi to everybody. Looking forward to game day tomorrow and, of course, the contest between Oregon and Auburn on ABC Saturday night. Appreciate the time.
No problem, my man. It's fun again.
All right. Subscribe, rate, and review. Do not forget. And reminding you, we are here 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Coming up on Monday, we recap the biggest storylines the entire weekend with Kirk Herbstreit joining us. Thank you so much. Enjoy the weekend.